Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, Austin Peterson here. Good morning. Today is Thursday, November the 15th, and I am live right now on Facebook. If you're listening to this podcast later on Podbean, Stitcher, or iTunes, just an FYI, you definitely should follow me on my Facebook page at AP4Liberty. That's AP, the number 4, AP4Liberty, because from time to time, my podcasts are actually live streamed first on Facebook so that I can interact with my supporters and followers, people like Sarah Kearney, Stephanie Cole, Nero Gregory, Adam Tilsley, Jeff Ebling, Ryan Estes, Scotty Nicholas, and Thomas Darling, as well as Jared Chapman, who are joining me right now in my live stream. Today's topic is an interesting one. It's an article that I shared around with my friends the other day about Americans and their inability to pass a basic citizenship test. And I thought this would be a really good topic for a podcast, considering my personal experience running for President of the United States, as well as for the U.S. Senate. I have run nationally, I have run statewide, and I have come into contact with tens of thousands of voters, maybe even hundreds of thousands of voters, potentially, I've come face-to-face with, asking me all sorts of myriad questions. You know, when you run for president, people have a certain set of questions, and of course, when you run for the U.S. Senate, people have certain sets of questions. But when I saw this story that came out in the Daily Signal, it just really hit me in the right place, because I can't tell you how many times people would ask me questions that betrayed a lack of a basic understanding of American history and of our civic processes. And so I want to share with you a story, this story today from the Daily Signal, and then I have another story for you that's related to that tangentially. And at the end of this podcast, during the live stream, if you have questions for me, anything topical, anything related that you would like to ask, you can do so, and I will be answering your questions live on this podcast. So those of you who are listening to this podcast later, again, on iTunes or Stitcher or Podbean or however you like to get your podcasts, just so you know, good idea to subscribe to my Facebook page, because that way you can participate when the podcast is live and not just pre-recorded, because that makes it more fun, because anything can happen. I could screw up. Anything could happen, right? I could spill my coffee all over my keyboard. My jewel could break. Anything could happen. That's what's great about a live show, and also terrifying for me, because it's very easy to screw this up. So let's get this started. This article came out about a week before the midterm primary elections. Really good article by Jarrett Stepman over at the Daily Signal. And it goes like this. In America, we celebrate democracy and are justifiably proud that this nation was founded on the idea that the people should rule. That's why it is so important that Americans be informed about their government. They are partakers in it. In fact, they control it. Under tyrannical systems, it matters little if the people are informed about political life. Autocrats make decisions for the people whether they like it or not. But in our republic, we rely on the informed decision-making of citizens to judge policies and the leaders who will implement them. Unfortunately, we are not very well informed. According to a recently released survey, Americans are woefully uneducated about the most basic facts of our history, to the point where most couldn't even pass a basic citizenship test. Now, at the end of this article, we're going to have a little fun. I'm going to pose the citizenship test to you. Don't cheat, guys. And the first person who answers in the stream gets the points, the internet points, which are worth millions of dollars, right? Anyways, a study by the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation, boo, found that only 1 in 3 Americans can actually pass the U.S. citizenship test. 1 in 3. Which asks the most basic questions about our history and how our system of government works. Passing the test requires answering 60% of questions correctly, right? You just got to get a D. But a majority of those participating in the survey couldn't even do that. Arthur Levine, President Woodrow Wilson Fellowship Foundation, said, "With voters heading to the polls, an informed and engaged citizenry is essential." Very true. Unfortunately, this study found that the average American to be woefully uninformed regarding America's history and incapable of passing the U.S. citizenship test. It would be an error to view these findings as merely an embarrassment. Knowledge of the history of our country is fundamental to maintaining a democratic society, which is imperiled today. Their survey lists some of the embarrassing answers given on the test. Listen to this, guys. This is going to crack you up. 72% of respondents either incorrectly identified or were unsure which states comprise the original 13 colonies. Only 24% could correctly identify one thing that Benjamin Franklin was famous for. 37% of people believe that Ben Franklin invented the light bulb. Yikes. Only 24% knew the correct answer as to why the colonists fought the British. Does anybody here know why the colonists fought the British? If you could answer that, that would be good. 12% incorrectly thought that General Dwight Eisenhower led troops in the U.S. Civil War, while 6% thought that he was a Vietnam War general. Oh my goodness. While most knew the cause of World War II, 2% said it was climate change. 2%. 2% said it was that the Cold War was due to climate change. Guys, what the hell? These people vote. Young people performed worst on the test. Out of all the test takers under the age of 45, only 19% passed. Now, you might think, older people are smarter. They haven't had as much time on this planet, right? But think about it. They're the ones who just got out of school. They should know more because they've had to take the Constitution class when they were in middle school. They should know more. Out of all test takers under the age of 45, only 19% passed. Only 19% of people under 45 can pass the basic citizenship test. Given these numbers, it's no wonder why so many young Americans say they would rather live under socialism than capitalism, and have little understanding of what that would mean in reality. Yikes. On the one hand, there is a case for forgetting history. Many cultures cling to historical grievances. Many cultures cling to historical grievances to the point where history becomes a major impediment to future success. Treated wrongly, historical memory can be toxic rather than helpful. We don't want to become trapped by the past, but we do want to learn from it in order to avoid repeating mistakes and build a better future. As citizens, knowledge of the past and of civics is crucial. Lacking such knowledge is unhealthy for a free country, and even dangerous, given how bad political life can become. One of our biggest problems today is that we often focus on tearing down our history rather than from learning from it. That needs to change. Now, if these sobering test results tell us anything, it's that we need to consider a fundamental change in how we approach education in the United States. And despite what some voices say, education funding is not the problem. Let me repeat that. Education funding is not the problem. The U.S. ranks globally near the top in spending on elementary and secondary education, yet we don't appear to be getting much bang for the buck. Perhaps it's time we take a harder look at the public school monopoly that's failing students and leaving generations of Americans without a basic understanding of our past. More generally, we failed to uphold Ronald Reagan's call for informed patriotism and more civic ritual, necessary qualities for the maintenance of a free country. In favor of negative and ideologically narrow accounts of America's past are now in vogue in our schools. This is a recipe for a dark future and needs to change. Right? Sarah Kearney says, nope, not teaching truth in schools is the problem. Well, maybe having government schools is itself the problem. There were so many times on the campaign trail when I, you know, I considered it, you know, running for office, I looked at it as part of my civic duty, you know, part of my civic responsibility. Now, I didn't serve in our nation's military. So one of the reasons why I run for, why I ran for office is because I have such a good knowledge of American history, I thought I would bring that to the American people. I thought I would bring that to our system of government. Someone who understands, someone who can pass the U.S. Constitution, the civics test, that is necessary for our U.S. citizenship and immigration services if you want to become an American citizen. And if you're watching this live on Facebook now, if you're watching it later on Podbean, you can see the little picture. The picture that I chose is one of Ellis Island, and I chose one of our immigration system in its early days. That's where my ancestors actually came through. They came through the Ellis Island system. But I thought to myself, you know, this is a perfect example where I remember so many times on the campaign trail, so many people were so certain of what other people needed to do to confirm that they were a citizen of the United States, and yet these people could not, for the most part, one in three of them, they couldn't pass a U.S. citizenship, only one in three of them could pass a U.S. citizenship test. Now, I wonder why, especially the Republican Party, people have become so obsessed with citizenship. You know, of course, it wasn't until the late 1800s that we started making laws about, you know, what's a citizen, who is and who isn't. You know, the 14th Amendment is a little bit hazy about what it means or what it takes to become a citizen. I do find it funny why people are so, why people who are so uninformed or ignorant about American history are so demanding on others and what their citizenship status is. Now, this is going to trigger a lot of people, and it's going to confuse a lot of people. And one thing I learned on the campaign trail is that you should never confuse people by offering them knowledge. As a politician, you can understand why politicians, I understand now why politicians behave the way that they behave, because their goal is to win elections. And if you want to win elections, you never, 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 never confuse people with facts or history or knowledge, because there's nothing that makes people angrier than feeling like they're stupid. So think about it. I can't tell you how many times I had a crowd. I was trying to explain a very complex subject about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or history, for example, and people would get very upset. People will get very upset, and people get upset. I didn't know why they were upset. It was because they were confused. And when people get confused, they get angry, because politics is kind of like showbiz in a way. Think about the best stand-up comedians in the world. Who are some of the best stand-up comedians in the world? Generally speaking, for the most part, most of the stand-up comedians have this sort of everyday, every guy, you know, every man, you know, blue-collar sort of feel to it, right? Why is that popular? Well, because the audience doesn't like to go and generally watch people who are smarter than them talk about interesting things. They want to watch somebody dumb that they can laugh at, or somebody that they can identify with, right? That's a strategy that politicians use as well. I'm blue collar, I'm an everyday Joe, and they don't talk about the Constitution, and they don't talk about history, and they don't emphasize it. Well, one, because, you know, an informed electorate would surely throw the bums out. Right? This, you know, the dumbing down of our education system in the United States has to have a lot to do with the fact that an educated and informed citizenry would certainly be much more dangerous to our government in its current form. Do you agree? So I could go on and rant and rant and rant about people who were making demands upon me that were, of course, unconstitutional. And, you know, you find yourself in a quandary there as a politician, because, you know, there's this whole concept of the noble lie. And I rejected it during my presidential and U.S. Senate campaigns. I refused to lie to people to get elected. But I can see why politicians do. I can understand why they do. Because when someone comes up to you and displays that they have absolutely zero knowledge about American history or the U.S. Constitution, I mean, it's like 95% of politicians are just going to lie to the person or defuse or change the subject or whatever. The best ones are the ones who are going to be able to learn how to change the subject. And that's really what you have to learn how to do. But people get angry because they don't understand what the hell you're talking about. Stephanie Cole says, smart people are more interesting. But here's the thing about that, Stephanie, is something I've been thinking about. If you're going to go to a TED conference in town, very few people are going to attend something like that compared to the latest, you know, reimagining of Mariah Carey concert, right? Very few people, I'd say maybe one in three, who are going to be engaged in political life, who are going to be engaged in civic life. And so it makes sense why very few people are engaged with the civic process, because obviously we have a whole lot of distractions. We have mass media. And I'm going to talk about that in an article from Politico that I wanted to read about that came out in February. Some of you probably saw it, about how fat, unhealthy Americans are threatening Trump's defense surge. But I want to give you guys the U.S. citizenship test, and I want to make it fair to the people who are listening to us later, so I won't take too much time to wait for the live stream answers. So you're going to have to be quick on these. Get your questions, get your answers ready. So the first question for you, and see if you can answer this without cheating, is number one, how many amendments does the Constitution have? I'll read that again. How many amendments does the U.S. Constitution have? I'll count down. Ready? Who's going to be the first person to get it? It's a tough one. It's probably the most missed question. Amendments are changes to the Constitution. You know the first? Yep, that's correct. James Habermel. James L. Habermel wins a million internet points. It's 27. The Constitution has 27 amendments. Sorry about the coughing, guys, but that's what you get when we're live. Amendments are changes to the U.S. Constitution. Congress added the first 10 in 1791. Those are the Bill of Rights. And Congress has added more. The 27th Amendment was added in 1992. Okay, ready? Now, here's the next one. This one should be easy. Name one branch or part of the federal government. Name one branch or part of the federal government. I'll give you a few seconds here. Name one branch or part. Remember, guys, only 1 in 3 Americans can pass this test. Only 1 in 3. If you can get this one, Justin Hannenberg answered it correctly. First, with the legislative branch, we have 3 branches of the federal government: the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. Well done, well done. All right, so name number 3. Ready? Name one U.S. territory. Name one U.S. territory. Can you do that? Oh, you guys are still answering on the last one. Name one U.S. territory. Who's going to get it? Name one U.S. territory. Can you do it? Eli Whitney and the Cotton Gin. Says Ryan Estes. Thank you. All right. Nice, nice. All right, moving on. Number 4, why does the flag have 50 stars? Number 4, why does the flag have 50 stars? Why does the flag have 50 stars? You got it. 50 states. Well done. That's right, because we have 50 states. Remember, guys, 1 in 3 can answer that. Only 1 in 3 Americans know why we have 50 stars on our flag. Okay? What was one important thing that Abraham Lincoln did? One important thing that Abraham... This is going to trigger all the libertarians, who are the hardcore libertarians. But what was one important thing that Abraham Lincoln did? I know we're going to get a lot of sarcastic answers here. Can you name one important thing that Abraham Lincoln did? Just one? Just one. 1 in 3 can answer that. Just name one thing. I know we're supposed to have multiple choice on this, but, you know, I don't have a multiple. Gettysburg Address, Jack Stalker, well done. Jack Stalker the man, a.k.a. Games for Fun, a.k.a. Ice and Fire. If you guys don't know Jack Stalker, he's one of my favorite new friends. He's the guy with the fashy haircut that I made fun of, the Richard Spencer haircut. He and Steffi Cole and Camellia Plaster, this is just a little... little promotion here. But if you don't know, I'm actually also, I live stream on Twitch. So if you're a gamer and you like to hang out with other libertarians or conservatives and freedom friends, then don't forget, you can actually follow me on Twitch. It's the same as everything else on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. It's just AP for Liberty. So make sure to follow me on Twitch. Stephanie, do me a favor and drop that link in there for me. I really appreciate it. But Jack Stalker is a good guy, and he's a lot of fun, and we like to hang out late in the evenings. Usually on Friday nights, we'll do a longer Twitch live stream where we just hang out and play together and talk about history, and it's a lot of fun. Okay, there are 4 amendments to the U.S. Constitution about who can vote. Can you tell me What are the basic requirements to be able to vote? What are the basic requirements about who can vote? What are the basic requirements? What do you need to be able to vote in a federal election in the United States? Can anybody name that basic? Remember, 1 in 3 can answer this. Only 1 in 3 Americans. Look to your left, look to your right, and the people to your, well, the guy to your left and the girl to your right cannot answer that question. Donald J. Hoover says very kindly, you sound healthier today than you did Friday. Thank you very much. Justin Hannenberg, first to answer again, was originally male and 25, now 18. Good to know. Yeah, I didn't want to have to wait until I was 25 to be able to vote, but of course you died when you were like 50 back then, so it's amazing that they made it that high even. Landowning white, well, this isn't 1796 anymore, 18, U.S. citizen. Yeah, I love your guys and your little sarcastic responses. They say landowning white males. Stephanie Cole says your ID. What? Stephanie? Come on. Aaron Scoggins says 18 U.S. citizen. But Justin Hannenberg got it first. Aaron Abel was correct. Leo Drizlov says, I heard you're going to have a podcast with John Burke, Austin. That's correct. Tonight, if you're listening to this today, especially live, November 15th, we're going to have a drunken politics show tonight. Me and John Burke drinking beer, hanging out, talking about freedom. Should be a good time. Okay, under our Constitution, some powers belong to the federal government. What is one power of the federal government? Can you name one power of the federal government? Can you name one single power? Anything. One power of the federal government. Donald J. Hoover says, sorry for the 6 shots. Yeah, Donald, you're the man. Donald has just revealed himself as Ice Road Trucker? Or Freedom Trucker or something like that. He bought a whole bunch of subscriptions for my friends in our Twitch channel the other day. So, and every time somebody buys a subscription, generally I will take a shot on the show. And he had 5 or 6 shots I had to take because he bought like 5 or 6 subscriptions. So I think my recovery has delayed because of that guy. But I appreciate it still. It was totally worth it. Totally worth it. Let's see. Secure the borders. Actually, that is not a delineated role, Chris Yautis. That is not in the Constitution, at least in the United States Constitution as it originally written. Securing the borders or border security or was not an original role of the U.S. In the U.S. Constitution. Treaties, very good. Ryan Estes, coin money. Yes, absolutely. That is one. Jim Rebuff says drone stealth fighters. Absolutely. Totally constitutional, right? Liz Fanning Press says tax. Yes, that is a power of the federal government. James Habermel says grant patents. Taxes and tariffs, says Kyle Allen. Yes. Lena Bryce, provide for the national defense. Alex Doyle, interstate commerce. Build roads. No. Leo Drizlov, do I think I can outdrink John Burke? No, but there's probably some other things that I could do that I could take him down a notch for. So we won't bring that up, but we'll talk about that later. We'll save all the John Burke fun for later, FYI. What is the supreme law of the land? Again, guys, remember, most people cannot pass this. What is the supreme law of the land? Can you name it? Can you name it? It's one of my favorite things. I love my country, I love freedom, and I love our... Stephanie Cole says that the role of the federal government is at least alone. Thomas Darling says it's to take away our rights and freedoms. Oh my good lord. Stephanie gets the point on that one, but Chris Yautis gets it correct. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Snap, 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 snap. Well done, Chris Yautis. You got it right. Wrong about securing our borders. I think that was originally a state's role. I have to double check on that one, but I know it wasn't the federal government's role to be, stopping Americans from leaving or entering their own country and, you know, patting them down and, you know, pulling them out of their horse and buggy carriages to ensure that they weren't carrying any of that delicious, sweet hemp seed that George Washington forced everybody to grow. Let's just avoid that topic, shall we? Anyway, how many justices are on the Supreme Court? How many justices are on the Supreme Court? Can anyone name that? Yeah, Austin, state's militia job. There you go, Sarah Kearney. All about them states. All about that states. Got that states. No trouble. I'm all about that states. That states. No trouble. I'm just going to make it my own song. All right. That's correct. Ryan Estes gets it right. Hannenberg gets it right. Chris Yatt is correct. 9. Jack Stalker gets it right. Sarah Kerning, Liz Fanning Press, you're all heroes. You're all heroes. Okay, ready? What is one promise that you make when you become a United States citizen? What is one promise that you make when you become a United States citizen? Now, what's interesting about this, you know, whole, like, the pledge is that, you know, people who come to the United States, it's amazing. Like, you know, if you're born here and you're raised here, you know, it's just kind of assumed that you're loyal to your country by some of the things that you do, like getting a driver's license, you know, a Social Security card. But some of those things, like your Social Security card or saying the Pledge of Allegiance in schools, for example, it's not something that you have a choice in, right? You don't really have a choice. I mean, in some states and in some schools, they don't force you to say the Pledge of Allegiance, which, again, I don't think anybody should be forced to pledge allegiance. Allegiance is something that should be a choice, and that's a choice that should be made by an adult. To not conspire against the U.S. James Habermel, you don't make a pledge to protect and defend the Constitution. You only do that if you join the U.S. military, if you take high office. The correct answer is you do swear allegiance to the United States. So when you become a United States citizen, you have to give up your loyalty to other countries. But I don't like the idea of forcing kids to take pledges because I think that that's a decision that an adult has to make. So it's interesting because, you know, we sort of have a higher standard for immigrants than we do for people who are born here. And it just makes me wonder, you know, people, we've been having this discussion about birthright citizenship, like trying to get rid of birthright citizenship in the United States. And it's always it sort of bothers me because it makes me think, well, of course, you know, most of the time, you know, here in the United States, you know, we're born here in the United States, and some people are born to, you know, parentage of what origin, right? Like, you know, you don't know. What is it really that makes an American? Is it a legal status that makes you an American? Actually, I saw my buddy John Burke post a meme the other day on Instagram that I think I disagreed with because he was talking about, you know, yes, being legal is what makes you an American. I think I have to fundamentally disagree with that because Americanism is not something that is tied inherently to a nation state, because I think that Americanism would exist even if the nation of the United States didn't exist. But it always bothers me when people hold the nation state in such high regard, because to me, a nation state, again, as I've said before, is just a means to an end. It's a means to accomplish something, right? We band together. We create this government. Governments are formed among men. Let me just read that actually directly. Governments, cha-cha-cha, so I can make sure I get this right for you, are instituted. Thank you very much. That's why you Google things. To secure these rights. So think about this. This is in the Declaration of Independence. Governments are instituted men. That to secure these rights, blah, blah, blah. I want to get this right. Governments are instituted. Oh, I hate it when they take you to a website that doesn't, that like, oh, it's the congressman's website. That's the last person you need to be listening to about the Constitution from. Unless it's Rand Paul or Thomas Massey or Justin Amash. Whoop, whoop. Or also, wait, Denver Riggleman won out in Virginia. I completely forgot. We got another big win that I hadn't talked about. Anyways, okay. Let me just read this to you guys from the Declaration of Independence. We're going to have a little fun. We'll go back to the citizenship test. Okay. Instituted. Okay. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Right, so let's just think about that for a moment, because I want you all, I need, especially those who are really super concerned about like immigration and concerned about nationalism and hold the nation state to such high ideals. Here in our Declaration of Independence, in our founding documents, we have a concept that is above the nation state, that is more important than the government of the United States. And it is these self-evident truths. All men are created equal. We have certain unalienable rights. And to secure these rights, that the purpose of having a government is to secure these rights. And we derive these powers, for these government powers, from our consent. Right? And whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, It is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Now let's talk about abolishing it, because on the altering side of things, yeah, you're talking about a process of constitutional amendment. But when you think about it, our own Declaration of Independence says that we have the right to abolish it. It's a right of the people to alter or abolish it if the government becomes destructive to protecting our life, liberty, or pursuit of happiness. Think about that for a minute, guys. Like, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, why is it such a hard concept for people to grasp? And it's especially something that we struggle with, you know, in the Republican Party, simply because so many people hold the nation state in the highest regard. When I love America because of what America represents, I love our country because it represents our unalienable rights. But I don't love my country so much that I want to sacrifice any of these rights, which means that at the end of the day, that if our government becomes hostile to our liberty, we can abolish it. We have a right to. And if we have a right to abolish it, well, then that should mean to you that there is actually something more important than government. There's actually something more important than the United States as a nation. Can you get that in your heads? Only 1 in 3 Americans probably can get that through their heads. It's just one of those forgotten concepts. It's one of those misunderstood concepts. And unfortunately, I think that when we get into this debate about immigration and citizenship, people hold legal status as if it's important to what makes an American. It's not. It's not. What's important as an American is that you respect your fellow equal citizens' life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And if you don't respect your fellow citizens' life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, then you can lose your freedoms. And that we band together to create this government so that we can pursue happiness, so that we can protect our lives, so that we can protect our liberty. But when government becomes destructive to that end, we can alter it, or we can go 1776 up all in this shit. Right? Think about that. Think about that. All right, back to the citizenship test, and I'm going to talk about fat and unhealthy Americans. Ooh, this is one that would get you in trouble if you were running for office. Couldn't be talking like this when you run for office. We elect a president for how many years? How many years do we elect a U.S. president? I'll give you a few seconds. How many other years is a president elected? Justin Hindenburg again. What is you? Are you some kind of super genius? Jesus. Nobody likes people like you, Justin Hindenburg. Freaking know it all. A lot of people probably answer 8. What are the 2 major political parties in the United States? It kind of pisses me off that they put that on the citizenship test, because all that does is just embed people into people's heads more and more, a two-party system. I mean, again, I'm a Republican, but I still think that, you know, the parties are killing our country. And sorry, third parties, you're not helping much either. There's 2. Exactly, Ryan. This is on our citizenship test. What there? Ryan Estes says, I thought just 1, right? There's effectively 1. Yeah. In order to become an American citizen, the Republicans and the Democrats start beating in your head immediately that there are 2 major political parties. You say, what are the 2 major political parties? The blue assholes and the red assholes, says Jack Stalker. There were 13 original states. Name 3. There were 13 original states. Can you name 3? Come on, guys. Come on, guys. You don't want to. You guys don't want to sound stupid today. You can name 3 of the original states, can't you? And if you're listening to this podcast later in your car or your commute, can you name it out loud? Ryan Estes said Delaware, Virginia, and New York. The gentleman from Missouri shall rise. Well done, Ryan Estes. Well done. Mr. President, if you guys haven't seen 1776, the musical, you gotta watch it. Such a great show. Molasses to rum to slaves, Oh, what a beautiful sound. You dance with us, we dance with you, in molasses to rum to slaves. Who sailed the ships out of Boston, laden with Bibles and rum? Who sailed the most to the African coast? Hail Africa, the slavers have come. If you haven't watched the 1776 musical, you're going to have to do it. So you can actually listen to that song as it's meant to be sung in a beautiful way. But there's a lot of gorgeous songs. And the interesting thing about 1776, the musical, is not only is it a great show, but it shows the actual story of what happened at the writing of the Declaration of Independence. I know I've talked about this in podcasts before, but I just love it so much. But I love the history in it because they actually tried to abolish slavery at the time of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And of course, the Southern states wouldn't go along, which is why the Southern state, South Carolina, Mr. Rutledge, they called the North hypocrites because the North engaged in the slave trade, even though people like Thomas Jefferson, they had slaves and people like that. They wanted to get rid of slavery, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and Ben Franklin. But they couldn't because they needed the Southern states in order to secede. So, in order to secede from Great Britain. Someone post a link of Austin's Twitch. Please do that. That would be very nice. AP, you need to release a Freedom Music CD. Yeah, just what I don't need. No music, says Ryan Estes. All right, sorry. Okay, ready? What is the name of the President of the United States now? He's your president. He's your president. And name his, I want to see his full name. First person to name his full name. All, not his middle initial, but his full name. What is it? What is our president's full name? Hashtag your president. Orange bad man. Ryan Estes got it right. Ryan Estes. Oh, wait. No, Jack Stalker got it first. Sorry. Orange bad man. Jim Rebuff. I'm looking for not initials. I'm looking for a full name. Jack Stalker got it right with Donald John Trump. That's right. Donald John Trump. Now, the idea of self-government is in the first three words of the Constitution. What are these words? What are the first three words of the U.S. Constitution? Name it, please. First three words of the U.S. Constitution. Who can do it? James Habermel, We the People.
We the People.
All right. So, what are we showing loyalty to when we say the Pledge of Allegiance? Number 20, what do we show loyalty to when we say the Pledge of Allegiance? What do we show loyalty to when we say the Pledge? Remember, guys, it's an easy answer. What do we show loyalty to when we say the Pledge of Allegiance? Justin Hannenberg says the flag, that's technically not correct. Jack Stalker says magic freedom cloth. Liz Fanning says sky cloth. James Habermel says country, and he got it right. That's correct, our country, the United States of America. That's what we're showing loyalty to when we say the Pledge of Allegiance. And that is your basic citizenship test. Well done. Most of you got it right. Most of you were frigging hilarious. Well done on that. So I want to finish with this real quick story, and then we can wrap this up, about unhealthy Americans, fat, unhealthy Americans threatening Trump's defense surge. Because it's not just, it's related to this topic, not just in our obesity epidemic, but also in the fact that, people, high school graduation rates are barely acceptable. So listen to this. Nearly three quarters of Americans aged 17 to 24 are ineligible for the military due to obesity, other health problems, criminal backgrounds, or lack of education, according to government data. That's a harsh reality check for the Pentagon's plan to recruit tens of thousands of new soldiers, sailors, pilots, and cyber specialists over the next 5 years. We all have this image in our mind of this hardy American citizen, scrappy, that can do anything, said retired Army Lieutenant General Tom Spear, co-author of a New Heritage Foundation paper on the military recruiting challenge titled The Looming National Security Crisis. That image that we keep in our heads is no longer accurate. Well, you know, when you're trying to build a Volkssturm, then, you know, it's sometimes it's difficult. Not everybody follows up to your Aryan standards, you Nazi! Sorry, I'm just kidding. Just kidding, guys. I've been watching too much MSNBC. Obesity and the percentage of people overweight in this country has skyrocketed in the last 10 to 15 years, he added. Asthma is going up, high school graduation rates are still barely acceptable, and some big cities, they are miserable. Criminality is also not going away. We have to face the reality that these things, in some cases, are getting worse, not better. That's on top of the more immediate obstacle that military leaders are warning about. Listen to this. This is an obstacle to the military. A relatively low unemployment rate is already making it harder to fill the ranks, particularly for the Army, which has historically benefited when full-time jobs are harder to find in the civilian economy. Right? Exactly. So when the unemployment is lower, more people are going to get themselves out into the private market and they're not going to go work for the government. It's difficult to recruit because there's 4% unemployment. It actually kind of reminds me of an old debate between John Maynard Keynes and Friedrich Hayek, and it's illustrated in the Keynes versus Hayek rap. If you guys haven't seen those videos, as soon as this is done, go buy a t-shirt from teamliberty.store. We've got a beautiful new shirt making fun of Che Guevara. We basically replaced Che Guevara's face with an NPC character meme. It's so sick. Definitely you want to get that or ask for that for Christmas. But as soon as it's done, go watch the Keynes versus Hayek rap. And John Maynard Keynes, Keynes is spelled K-E-Y-N-E-S. Great, great, great videos. And there's two of them. And in one of those videos, I forget which one it is, they talk about unemployment and the military and what it means for the United States. And what it means is that when you have low unemployment, right, more people want to go get jobs and make money than they do want to serve the nation. But when unemployment is high, people want to go serve in the military because they're just trying to get jobs. So, of course, you know, people were talking about the question of why we got out of the Great Depression. How did World War II get the United States out of the Great Depression? Well, not really. Only in the sense that, we destroyed, all of Europe was destroyed, and we were the only, power basically left that could manufacture us and Russia. You know, we don't, war prosperity is like the prosperity that plague brings. It's kind of like the broken window fallacy in a sense, because John Maynard Keynes was sort of lauding or praising the fact that during the war we had very low unemployment because people were in the military. Well, of course, you could have 100% employment in the military, and then the soldiers would have nothing to eat because there'd be nobody to work the fields back home, right? You still need an economy to be able to support the military, right? The military doesn't support the economy. It's the other way around. The economy, the growing economy, the strong economy supports the military. So I think it's actually a very good thing that it's actually better for the United States that if we have a problem with recruitment in the military because our economy is booming. That's a good thing. So a strong economy means that people are not desperate, so desperate that they feel the need to go and serve because they have options in the private market. That's a good thing if you're a conservative, you believe in fiscal conservatism and you want a strong economy, then the byproduct of that is going to be, fewer recruits in the military. And I think that's okay. I think that's okay. I think we actually need less firefighters in the United States, too. Just maybe less cops. Maybe less government all around. That's the thing. You know, conservatives like to talk a big game about less government until you start looking at what that means. That means less police, less firefighters, less federal agencies, right? Because the reality is that Democrats love the federal government and hate the state and local governments. And conservatives love the state and local governments and hate the federal government. But at the end of the day, not conservatives, I guess Republicans, so not true conservatives, right? I don't want to confuse you here, confuse the issue. But Republicans love state and local governments and they hate the federal government. But at the end of the day, they all support and praise one form of government. Libertarians are like, F you both. God, this is so going to piss people off. Michael Wharton takes insult to the firefighter concept because he just passed his firefighter training and he's in the military. The biggest statist I know, Michael Wharton. Welcome to the live stream today, man. Nice to have you here. All right. So it's difficult to recruit because there's 4% unemployment. So we're fat, we're unhealthy, and our economy is booming. So it makes it difficult for people to get in the military. Well, bad on that. It sucks that our nation is so obese. That's terrible, but it's good that our economy is booming. We want that. So do me a favor, guys. After this is over, make sure you get yourself a beautiful new MSNBC t-shirt because those things are going to sell like hotcakes. I think they already are. I just got a text from my buddy Angelo Pacheco, and I can't read what it says, but apparently it looks pretty good. He's going to order one for me because they're selling like hotcakes. Get your very own MSNPC at teamliberty.store. That's teamliberty.store. Really appreciate you guys coming in and joining me today in my live stream. Very grateful. And don't forget, tonight I'm doing drunk politics with my buddy John Burke on Twitch. Should be a good time. And of course, you can follow me on Twitch at twitch.com/AP4Liberty. And if you're listening to this podcast later, don't forget to subscribe to me on Facebook so you can hang out with us in these podcasts when we do them live, which we do rather infrequently, but it's still fun to be a part of it because you get to answer questions and you get to ask questions and you get to have a little bit of fun with all of us. So make sure you do that. Jim Rebuff, Jack Stalker, Camellia Plosser, Michael Wharton, Kyle Allen, Sarah Kearney. Really appreciate you guys. Ryan Estes, Leo Drizlov. I really appreciate all you guys coming and joining me today in my podcast, and I hope you guys all have a wonderful day.